John Schneider. How are you doing, buddy?
2 degrees in here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We like to keep it nipply in here, sir.
Wow.
How do you used to use? You're still a handsome man. Look at you. Do you? I know you get this a lot, but I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, is that when I was about my son's age, man, there was nothing better than the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, yeah.
Knight Rider and Fall Guy, dude. I mean, I'm telling you, you've been on the show before by phone. It was, I think you and Tom were doing a big concert up at the ranch the last time we talked to you.
Yeah. You know what's great about all those shows you mentioned? All the same stunt guys.
Oh, they really?
Yeah.
So you all got
Knight Rider and A-Team.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
All the same guys did, and girls did Knight Rider, Dukes of Hazzard. Dukes of Hazzard, of course, was first.
Yeah.
Then Fall Guy came, and then Knight Rider came, and then A-Team or somewhere. So yeah, all of the same guys. That's why it was so great.
Oh, because nobody died.
Nobody died. Nobody even got shot. No. I shot Boss Hogg. I wrote and directed the last episode of Dukes, and the only time anyone ever got shot was in that episode. I'm kind of dark.
But he got shot in the heart.
But it hit his wallet.
Oh.
So Boss Hogg was saved by his greed and by his credit cards, which I thought was apropos.
Yeah.
There's a new song on the new, when I talk about the film festival, of course,
yeah.
But there's a new album. I just did a new album, came out of the flood in good old Louisiana. And one of the songs is called Every Friday Night. And the chorus is, he drove a 69 orange Dodge Charger with 01 on the side. 440 Magnum V8 and Jet Skinner's flag was flying high. He was Bo and Luke, loved him some Daisy Duke in TV's most famous ride.
Yeah.
He was only 12, but he was raising hell every Friday night.
Dude, that's so appropriate.
Little tribute.
Do you you get country artists coming up to you all the time saying the same thing? Man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they want to be like,
NASCAR folks, Earnhardt Jr. is a big fan. I mean, it's really great. Dukes
now, you
great.
Love it, or you, like, we had Henry Winkler on the other day, and Henry seems to be about sick of talking about Fonzie. And we had Wolpat on the show, and he doesn't seem to be interested in talking about it much either.
Well, they've not done a lot.
Yeah. you're right. You've been solid all these years.
Well, you know, sometimes it's like the Haves and Have-Nots.
Right.
It's the number one show on cable on Tuesday nights.
That's unbelievable.
And Smallville did great. But right now, the Haves and Have-Nots is the show. Right.
Let me just tell you real quick. I was a big Smallville fan. You were great on Smallville.
Oh, thank you.
The importance
of... Kevin Costner even thinks so.
Well, I mean, he said that. We had him on the show because...
With his guitar, right?
We didn't let him play the guitar. I said to him, you have the... If you're a Superman fan, that relationship between Clark and his human father was a big deal. Because
right.
That sets up his humanness on this planet.
Well, it became so on Smallville, really.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Because he dies in the comic books at a relatively young age. But in Smallville, you really show that. And then... And Costner... had to try and do it like you did it in order to bring that into the movie.
Well, yeah, but you've got to have you have to be very familiar with the legend. You have to be very familiar with being a dad.
Right.
Right, and I'm not sure, I think it's been a while, I'm not sure how old Kevin's kids are, but when I was Jonathan Kent on Smallville, my kids were teenagers. My kids were the age
so you knew
of
you,
Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't little. And the guys that wrote Smallville, their kids were little. So there was a constant battle between myself and them because you treat little children differently
sure.
than you treat teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you seldom want to chain up a 3-year-old
right.
you know, or dismiss yourself from them altogether, and so there was a bit of a bit of an issue between myself and them, and then there was something that Kevin had to say as Jonathan Kent about maybe you should have let the school bus of children die or something like that. If you have a history with the character, I do believe I could have said that in a way that you would have known I did not mean it.
Right.
I was actually testing your mettle.
Uh-huh.
But that's not how it came out in that show. How it came out in that movie, and that's the one thing when people come and say, you know, Costner's Jonathan Kent said he should have let the kids die.
Right.
I thought, you know,
you
just thought about that for like
right,
5 minutes.
Right.
You could have figured that out.
This is John Schneider in the studio with us. John,
I mean,
has...
Hillary does it every day. She says, you know,
whoa. Have you voted yet?
Oh, yeah.
Really
I voted.
Yeah.
I voted, yeah. Yeah, I did.
I'm going to. I just, every time I go, I have a small window of time. And right. The lines are around the corner. So eventually I'm going to have to wait.
You can have some tea. You can have some tea.
No, I'm going to go. I'm going to put my time in. I'm going to figure out a day that I have time to stay there.
Well, I live in Louisiana, and I'm here on the doing the film festival, so I had to absentee vote.
Yeah.
And, it's great. And for those other folks who absentee voted who may be thinking about changing their vote because of recent things, I heard that you can, actually.
You can go there and change your vote.
Which I didn't know that there was such a thing in place.
I didn't know either, but I guess, but early voting is relatively new. Yeah.
I read it yesterday. Yeah, I'm sure that... Trump figured out a way to put that in place, right? Let me help you.
There's going to be, they say today's going to be even worse, that they're going to dump a whole bunch of new WikiLeaks stuff today.
Well, you know.
I know, how much worse can it get?
You know, It's bad stuff.
An odd time for our country, it really is.
Well, it's an odd time for our country, but it's odd to think you can be in such a public place. I mean, the most public position on the planet right now, certainly these two people are in.
Right.
And to think that
one of those,
that there
people
could be anything that would not be known at this point, especially when you're in a hash slinging, not even a debate.
No,
I mean, for a while, people haven't been running for themselves. They've been running against the other, which I think is always ugly.
It's like a high school student council is what it's like.
Yeah.
Sheila banged three guys in third period. Yeah. All
so
the bad stuff.
It's
going to
be an even more interesting world if the things turn out the way I think they're going to turn out. Then come February, come March, it's going to be very interesting.
What do you think, Sean? You think he's going to win?
Absolutely.
You do. You know what's so weird is that I was like, and we were saying together, we're like, Galvin thinks it's predetermined that she's going to win and all the power.
Not anymore.
Like, but now
right.
I'm like.
It makes a big difference now.
I went to the rally
here.
He was
telling the truth.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. I mean, it wasn't like, it wasn't like the whole, remember when Ross Perot was running and all of a sudden he said some things? He said, oh, he's crazy. Well, they tried to say he's crazy with Trump, and then all of a sudden.
Started coming out.
What was that great movie Mel Gibson did? Conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Right? And what happens if the crazy cab driver is being followed?
Right.
Because he read what? Catcher in the Rye?
Uh-huh. Yeah. If he's not so crazy after all. I went to the rally that was here, the Trump rally, just to kind of check it out and see what was there. And in our big outdoor amphitheater, 20,000 people, and it was pretty much, I would say, three quarters full. And it was hard to find an accurate account on TV of how many people were there. Even Trump was saying, look, they're right there, and they won't turn their cameras around because they won't get a full shot of how many people are here. Until you're there and you see it, bird's eye view, you don't realize that you think he's just a whiner and a complainer, but then you go out and you see it firsthand.
You know, the man has made several billion dollars.
Yeah. He knows something.
It's hard, yeah. And we're a country that's in financial...
Ridiculous debt.
Ruin.
Yeah, debt.
Mm-hmm. Debt. So, for politics aside, that's not even politics. It's just simple economics. And when the whole thing started, I thought, because I did vote for Ross Perot.
Yeah.
Because I remember Ross Perot said one thing. He said, I'm not great at foreign policy, but I know how to make $1 billion.
Right.
And at that point, we were like $8 trillion in debt, right? Now we're 20-something trillion dollars in debt. And just for that reason, I mean, somebody needs to figure that out.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I mean, we need help in that regard.
And how do you not think a businessman who turned a $1 million gift into a $10 billion empire could be that guy?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So. And all the other stuff aside, I thought about having bumper stickers made. What can you say on the air here? I won't. I will not say the whole word, but I said, but he's our a-hole. Right? So,
That's actually pretty good.
It's very sad. One of the great things about Hillary is that she was part of my, I have an organization with some friends called the Children's Miracle Network Hospitals.
Right.
And when she was First Lady of Arkansas, she was very, very instrumental in helping with Children's Miracle Network and a delightful person with regard. I mean, she does absolutely everything she says about what she, how she feels about children.
Kids,
I absolutely believe with 1,000% of my soul. And she did wonderful things for Children's Miracle Network.
Okay, maybe
so you cannot ever take that away.
Right. Well, she might have a job there in the future. Then.
Well, when she gets out.
Tell me about how you were involved in independent filmmaking. Hey, look, you're in Florida. You can say whatever you want there. Nobody here is going to.
This is like Hazard County.
Yeah.
Yeehaw. What?
Filmmaking. How we went
filmmaking.
From,
you had a camera.
Yeah.
No, so what did you making film anymore?
What did you do? What did you? What was the first project you did? You direct?
No,
you
I
write
can't talk
something?
About that. Right. Well, I won't ever run for president. First thing I did was I started in theater in 1968.
Right. When you were what, 16?
I was 8.
Thanks a lot.
Wow.
Womp, womp, womp.
Sorry, I had to put my ears together real quick.
So it was theater in elementary school,
right?
Magic and guitar and all that kind of stuff. And but first time I was ever on in front of a camera was an industrial film for. It couldn't have been for the military. It had to be. Again, it was some sort of a thing where someone got beat to death with a pugil stick.
Oh,
pugil
geez.
Stick. Pugil, anyway.
Any stick will do.
It was any stick will do. Hey. But anyway, so I was a 15-year-old, 16-year-old. 16, I had to be, because I drove myself there. But I had to have all my... This was 1976.
Right.
I all had long... Even you, maybe.
Yeah, no.
Had not long even, hair.
Maybe in 76, I probably had hair, but I don't know if it was long.
It was long. Well, I had to have all my hair, my hair shaved off in the military haircut.
So
I did that. It was called A Few Good Men. It was not the play or the movie that came later, but it was a little industrial film. And then some commercials. Snuck into Smoking the Bandit. I'm in the end credits of Smoking the Bandit, standing there with a black hat. A tire came off of Jackie Gleason's car and hits me in the feet, and then it freezes, and then they run the credits, and I'm there like, but I did. I snuck over the fence, found somebody with a radio, and said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I'm late. Traffic is a bear. Where's makeup?" And they went humming, humming, humming.
Really?
Over there. Yeah. A little BS goes a long way.
No kidding.
Nice.
Yeah.
Got you in the
That's
room.
A real story. I
That's a
you,
real story.
No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And then, yeah, right? And then when auditions for Dukes of Hazzard came around, they were looking for people 24 to 30 years old from farms in Georgia.
Right. And you were younger than that.
I lived in Georgia. My mom worked for IBM, so I was there. I went to high school outside of Atlanta. And but I was not 24. I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not from a farm in Georgia. I'm actually from Westchester County, New York.
Right.
Which, if you watch any of the cop shows, whenever somebody is really snooty, they say, "Oh, he's from Westchester."
Yeah. Tony Burton from
Exactly.
Westchester.
Yeah. There you go. So I was 18 from Westchester County, New York. Told him I was 24 from Snailville, Georgia, which I got it wrong. It's Snellville. And look, there's the car. Woo! Yeehaw! There's Tom. Bless your heart.
You say it like he's dead.
No. He's great. So I got the part.
Yeah.
Got the part.
Tom got the part at the same time? Which one of you got cast first?
I did not actually get the part until they found Wopat. And Wopat was doing a Broadway show called I Love My Wife. Great singer, great Broadway actor. He's a terrific guy. We've been friends since the moment we met.
Right.
And they were casting in those days. Obviously, they didn't cast actors. They cast chemistry. And until... I was auditioning every week with different people and showing up every week. And the pairing just didn't quite work until Wopat came in. So he came in on a Monday or a Tuesday. And we auditioned, screen tested at CBS on Friday. And they let us know on Saturday that we had it. And it wasn't you're perfect for Bo and you're perfect for Luke.
It was
you guys
together.
Are perfect for Bo and Luke.
Gotcha.
And of course, Catherine, how can you not get along with Catherine? So we had a great camaraderie, still do, with Kathy Bach as well. We just looked like we were had grown up together somehow.
Don't not answer this question. Which one of you have made sweet love to Catherine?
Don't answer this question.
There's no way.
I'll tell you my three answers to the most asked question. The answers are as follows: 329, 7, and no.
Why no? Did you not have a chance?
No.
Is she not into you?
No.
You don't
do that.
You do it, but most actors do do that. They fall in love on the set.
They're idiots.
But you were 18. You are
so
18
doesn't mean I'm required to be an idiot at 18.
No. Well,
I had done theater for 10 years. You don't.
So
do
you
that.
Weren't. Yeah, you weren't new to the.
You theater. Don't.
I'm trying
do
to
that.
Figure out the other ones. The 329. The 329.
How many? How many cars they had?
There you go.
And what was the second one?
How many?
Seven.
Seven.
Seven
how
is
many years of the
how
show
many years of show ran?
Oh, okay.
And then no.
And no. No, and you don't do that. Anytime people do that, it doesn't work. I mean, I I was going to say I was on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, but no, I was not on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. I played a role on that show.
Oh, I can ask you a question. So I made out with a girl from Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, and then we had questions about whether or not she was underage when that happened. The daughter on that show.
What happened to her?
I don't know. I don't even remember her name. We met at the MTV Movie Awards.
Yeah.
Years and years and years ago. Like, before I was married, I was young. I had more hair and all that. And then
you got a hair issue, right?
Yeah. I'm looking at you and looking at how handsome you are, and I'm like, what happened to me over all the years? And then I can't remember.
Because you were 16 in 1968.
Anyway, so you realize rule number one: don't hook up with the cast member.
No, don't do that. It's
just
terrible.
Guest hosts. Just
terrible.
Guest member.
No, don't. Don't do it.
When do you get married?
When did I get married?
Or during Dukes? Yeah,
I got married the first time during Dukes.
Ooh, how many years into it?
Four. 4 years into it.
You were like, oh man, look at me now, cover of People magazine.
Yeah,
I'm ready to go. Let's
Tiger
get married. Yeah. So, but I would imagine outside of the TV show, you guys had your pick of women. I mean, chicks, you two were the hottest things on TV.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, every kid wanted to be like, I mean,
and
that was
music. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's one of the reasons why you become, when I was a kid, long after you were a kid, the Monkees were on television. Help, the Beatles stuff was going on, and the Beatles were just the greatest band in the world. They weren't the iconic thing they became afterwards.
Right.
But I remember seeing the Beatles being chased by the women, and oh, it was great, all that kind of stuff, and the pictures of Sinatra with the autographs, and you know, there was a great allure for that. That's one of the reasons. Anybody who becomes famous intentionally and says that wasn't part of it.
No, that's
lying.
The reason you get into it.
Yeah.
Of course.
They're lying. Yeah. So, it was great. And then I did country music after that, and kind of bubblegum music before the country music.
Right.
With Scotty Brothers and CBS.
Does the TV station?
Like Leif Garrett and all that stuff.
Do they come to you and say, hey, look, you're the biggest thing in entertainment right now and TV? Let's get a guitar in front of you and let's start putting it out.
No, they saw me on the People's Choice Awards and said, you fart better than most people on the radio saying you should have a contract. Wow.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
Good enough.
Yeah. No, I musical theater. You know, I was an asthmatic child, and one of the things I did to a doctor gave me, seems like a diversion, it's really not, gave me balloons to help my lung power.
Uh-huh.
And as I was doing that, my dad played in a square dance band, and the singing thing just kind of naturally came out of trying not to wheeze.
Right.
And so by the time I started Dukes, I had done probably 15, 16 musicals.
Oh, no. So when did they love
so
you?
So it just made sense.
Yeah. You were good looking. You were, you were an actor. You were a singer. They were like, we got a pot
There's
of gold
a little
here.
Bit of the Gomer Pyle element.
Yeah, but that's fresh, though.
You know,
let me ask you this. It's been long enough. I could probably ask you. What was the pay for the first year of Dukes of Hazzard?
Oh, gosh. My first contract was $1,200 a episode.
Wow. Episode? Oh my God!
Yeah. And then I had a manager, agent
stealing half of that.
It got up to they got a tenth.
Yeah,
10%.
Yeah.
Then got the first year up to $7,200. I think.
Wow.
Like a show, an episode. Yeah. Which I mean, my God. I got $25 a day per diem when I was auditioning for 5 weeks, and I paid my car off.
So $7,200 an episode.
Oh my goodness, it was unheard of.
Yeah.
But that the first year of Dukes, I bought a 79 911 SC, brand new Porsche, and it was brand new loaded. I think $29,000.
Oh,
yeah. So I bought Lamborghinis for $35,000 back in those days. Yeah.
So what was the when Bo and Duke left and Coy and Vance came in?
Wow, you got your stuff together here.
Well, you told us. I think Coy and Vance were auditioning with you. That's how you knew them, right?
Well, I had done some work with Byron Cherry in Atlanta. We had done some commercials together. We knew each other really, really well. I was surprised that Byron didn't get cast. They didn't bring him out. And I think it was because we were both blonde.
Yeah,
because we got along like Tom and I did.
Right.
Except Tom is a very intelligent sort of, he's perfect Luke.
Yeah.
And the problem with Byron and John is it's kind of Bo and Bo.
Yeah, that's true.
Bo and Boer. So, those guys came in, and I'd suggested when we left, I'd suggested that they revisit a guy named Byron Cherry in Georgia. But they wanted to have all the pictures, and I think that they knew they wanted Byron to begin with.
Right.
They did this whole press about the lines of people auditioning for Bo and Luke, which did nothing but help us, really. Because
sure.
Here's two guys, and someone who's trying to rub dirt in our face said, it's going to take these 6,000 people to replace the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
It was...
to your favor.
I think it was in our favor. And then they came out, and they had an impossible job to try to replace... we were family members to people who watched us every Friday night.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so it was kind of like going in and taking someone's two older brothers out and replacing them with two that looked
foreign
kind of
brothers.
Like them.
Yeah.
Wearing the same shirt, but they gave the dark-haired guy the blonde guy's shirt and vice versa.
Right.
And hoping no one would notice.
What do you remember the dispute then? Like, what was the difference in money at that point? Like, before, what were they offering?
We didn't leave about money. We left about our contract, about our merchandising royalties.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and they were... less than accurate.
I gotcha. So
yeah, clerical error.
Mm-hmm. That always strikes me as odd because you have to go in, you'll make these deals, and then you need to have a forensic accountant
in
there and find everything.
Right, and in those days they kept receipts in shoeboxes, and it was all written down.
Yeah,
and this was 1979 through 1982. Is the
Hillary could have got away with it at
discrepancy.
That time?
But there were no Dookie leaks. Dookie leaks. That's right. So there was considerable money made. In fact, on the Hollywood Reporter and Variety, sometime in 1982, they announced that Dukes had just grossed $200 million in merchandising.
And you were like, wait a second.
Well, and we had gotten, like, I don't know, not nothing.
Right.
We had gotten, I think Tom and I split $60,000 on that.
Oh, not your percentage of $200 million.
And contractually we were supposed to get, we're supposed to split 5%, I think is what it was. And we said, hey, you know, this doesn't seem quite right. And they ignored us. And then we knocked again and they ignored us. And in retrospect, we used a very bad word when we finally got pissed off enough to say, that's it, we're not coming. We didn't walk off. We just didn't come back.
Right.
So we did it as I thought at that point. I was 24 years old, 23 years old. We did it as properly as you can do that.
Sure. You didn't want to burn that bridge too much.
Right.
Yeah.
But we had a publicist that used the word cheated, which was a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back on it, they didn't. I mean, they inherited the system that was incorrect.
Right.
It's kind of like FEMA. You don't get mad at the FEMA people who are there with their iPads telling you that your refrigerator is
right. It's not their fault.
It's not their fault. They work for a faulty, broken
system.
Horrifically bad system.
Right.
FEMA. We fell victim to that same thing there, but we called the enforcers of that bad system cheaters.
Uh-huh.
And that was wrong. And so I'm forever careful now about what I say, not because I'm not afraid, but I don't want to call somebody a cheater
if they're not
Now, if you design this system to cheat me, then yeah, you're a cheater.
Right.
If you're just enforcing the laws of a faulty system, then you know, so we use a bad word and paid for it.
Do you?
But we did not quit because we wanted more money.
No,
I
never knew that.
Yeah, we did not come back because we were convinced, and still, almost 40 years later, am convinced that system was
faulty.
Faulty in not in our favor, and that we truly are owed $40-50 million.
They never settled
them. They still sell the cars.
Yeah.
they put a cover over the flag, but they sell the cars. No matter what they said about they're not making the cars anymore. No, of course they're making the cars. So, yeah, it was a bad
deal. So what brought you back to the show then? What did they say? Hey, we're going to
realizing that it was more important for them because they could not respond to that word.
Right.
So the word hurt them, and it hurt us terribly. We realized that in order for them to welcome us back in any way, in order for them to negotiate in any way, that they were admitting that they had cheated in some fashion, which they hadn't.
Gotcha.
Right? So they said, we can't. And they were friends of mine. And they said, look, you need to understand, your people used the wrong word.
Right.
If there was a clerical error, if there was some discrepancy in bookkeeping, if there was blah, 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 then we could together discover
fix it,
and fix it publicly. But we cannot respond to this word.
That is very interesting.
You can stay away, and we can't, as much as we'd like to, we cannot bring you back unless you just come back.
Right.
So we did. We realized, okay, well, we screwed that up.
Yeah.
And
did they fix it for the next season?
No, of course not.
Still,
still no, and they still haven't.
Yeah,
they still haven't. And, and they were saying, you know, you're not on the box.
Yeah.
So we're the Dukes of Hazzard.
Right.
What do you mean we're not on the box? And we were on most of the boxes, but the boxes that we weren't on. So funny. My mom went out and took pictures, right, with a 110 Instamatic.
Uh-huh.
Look it up. Google it. Of the wrist racer was a big thing, and then the barn burner was a big thing. Well, our pictures weren't on those boxes, but they were in front of these big, they call them standees.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So there's Tom and John. There's the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
On the display that all of these things were on the shelves in front of.
But not
but
on
we
the
weren't
box.
On the box.
Oh, that's, wow.
So, yeah, so, I mean, there was some...
You know what I say? I say
is the word
cheats.
Subterfuge?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, subterfuge, all right.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Brilliant on their part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. So, yeah, we were it was a sad time. And it's a time, I think, probably that damaged, that still carries some damage to me and to Tom now.
I'm sure. I heard Johnny Bench, the baseball player, the other day on a radio interview, said in his entire career... He only made $2 million. He had gotten out of baseball just before a baseball player started getting paid a ridiculous amount of money. Mm. So if I'm a guy like you that had one of the biggest merchandising shows in the history of television and a show that was such a huge hit for, 7 years?
Well, arguably still.
I mean, CMT was running them all. I remember getting the...
Well, it's more popular now that they're not showing it.
Yeah.
And people, right? It's crazy. It's crazy. You want someone not to read your book, tell them not to retell them under no circumstances.
Not read this book. Don't do it.
You can't handle it. What?
And they'll run out and grab it. That I would be angry about that. I would, especially if I knew I deserved them. Yeah, you can't hard.
If I hadn't kicked myself in my own ass, then I would be angry about it. I'm not angry. I'm still trying to figure out how to get that accounting.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my God, who wouldn't?
Yeah. Right. Well, there's no angry. There's no excitable angry accountants out there that are like, I'll handle this project. We'll take
They've
on the
tried,
beast.
They tried, but it's the problem is it was just before the Excel. I mean, it was still Lotus 1-2-3 on a floppy disk.
Right.
So it is arguable that we don't have all those records. If you can show us them,
mm-hmm.
if
we'd
you
be
can
happy
show
to
us,
go back.
We'd be happy to. Yeah, you give us an accurate accounting, and we'd be happy. And it's impossible.
Man, by the way, if you're just joining us, John Schneider, who is in the studio with us. TV now, you're watching him on the Have and Have Nots.
What a great show.
I have never seen the Have and Have Nots. I apologize, but I know that you told us you were on it last time, and it's highly rated. And
Tyler
Perry.
Didn't take my advice then?
I don't think I've watched TV since The Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, okay.
It's impossible. Cool. I have kids now. You know what it's like.
It's the most popular show on cable, the highest rated show on cable on Tuesdays.
And we were trying to figure out what you play on a Tyler Perry show. You can't be a good guy.
There are no good guys on this show. Actually,
that's good.
I'm a judge. I'm currently in jail. My name is Jim Cryer. I'm in jail for I was running for governor, and I did some I don't know some something happened that
horrendous.
I honestly don't remember what in the world happened. They say I covered up. Oh, I remember. My son in a drug rage ran over someone and killed them, and
you covered it up.
I Well, they say I covered it up. I'd say it was somebody else.
Ah, I gotcha. Okay.
It was somebody else. I mean, it had to be somebody else. Right. My son wouldn't do that.
No, of course not.
No, so it's a great show. It's on Tuesday nights. We come back on the air January 8th, I believe, is the first Tuesday in January.
Uh-huh.
It's on the OWN Network. And how about, you know that Boo made 50, I think it was, it's either $52 or $58 million.
Wow.
Last weekend.
Yes, that is the
That's the Tyler Perry Halloween Madea movie. And I tell you what, this guy, I spent a lot of time with him, and you know, you spend time with people and you don't get it. You think, well, how in the world? But you spend 30 seconds with Tyler and you go, this is the smartest, hardest working person I've ever met.
Yeah.
There is no way that this man can fail anymore at anything.
Yeah.
He just gets it.
That doesn't happen by accident. You don't have that much success in that many different things unless you do have it.
No.
And how old is he? He's got to be like my age, maybe even
older. No. He's younger than me.
Yeah.
He's Tyler's 45, 46.
Okay, so we're about the same age.
45?
47.
47. Okay, 47.
And the reason why I'm asking that is because you know there's a little piece of him inside that's like, oh my God, Bo Duke is here.
Oh, yeah. He watched the show, and there's some outtakes somewhere of me yelling yeehaw as Jim Pryor. But what a wonderful thing. I was not prepared to learn anything after 50. I mean, I'd been doing this a long time,
sure,
since 68, and I thought I knew, you know, I had sat on every hot stove I could, and I'd learned every lesson. It was like, okay, I am Yoda.
Here comes this young guy.
Here, what's young buck? So,
Owen, huh? You ever meet Oprah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I met Oprah, actually, way back when I did a movie called Eddie Macon's Run with, there's Jim Cryer. Eddie Macon's Run with Kirk Douglas.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Well, that must be
what
great.
An experience that was. And part of the promotion for that was her show. And then since then, I've met her a bunch of times. She's a big supporter of the haves and have-nots.
Yep.
Certainly, it's a... I think it was the first show on her network to exceed 1 million viewers, and now we're almost at 4.
Good for you.
We're knocking on 4 million viewers a week, which on a cable network is really quite unheard of.
Absolutely. Good. So, good for you, because I know anybody.
There I am. Oh, I'm so serious. I'm serious, guy. That's not going
to
go
You get to make
well.
Out with Hot Black on that
well
show?
For me. That's Tika Sumpter. She's amazing. And what is my rule?
We did.
The show started out with me and a prostitute.
Yeah.
In a hotel room.
Awesome.
And it's
now I'll watch it, John.
It's Candace. It's Candace. Yeah.
That's a
she
beautiful lady.
She winds up being my daughter's roommate in college, and it just it all falls apart.
I like this guy.
The guy is a good character. Yeah. Well, he tried to do the right thing. I mean, that was the right thing.
Yeah.
Well, right?
Hey.
I mean, come on. So, look, he's watching television. Now, this is great. We live in a time where you're watching someone on radio watch television.
There's a portion of the show that we always go, this is the portion of the show where we look at pictures and nobody else can see.
That's right.
Is that
this is us
on pictures.
Looking at pictures.
Speaking of pictures, I want to ask you this. The photo shoot that you did, there was a photo shoot where you were crying, and they said, was that legit? It was. That was amazing. There was. Here's the deal. It was a photo shoot that was being done, and John had some emotions about his dad, right, who had passed away. If I'm getting it wrong, please tell me. Asked the guy to capture that. And there's some of them the most emotional pictures, because you have this stoic face that you see, still stoic but breaking down, and as a father. Not even as a guy who has a father. As a father,
right.
You hope. I would only think that you hope that that's what you leave with your kids. That you can, not that you want to see them cry, but that you affect them that much.
We were doing a photo shoot for the haves and have-nots, and my dad had a stroke the week before, and I knew that he was not long for this world,
right.
And during lunch, during that photo shoot, my brother called me and told me my dad had passed
away. Oh, it was during the photo shoot.
And so we had the requirement of taking the pictures, so I wasn't going to stop. We took our pictures, and then I asked the photographer, I said, are we done? Did you get everything? And he said, yeah, we're done. And he's probably thinking, I want to leave. And I said, take a couple of more pictures.
Yeah. And they were...
And he said, well, I just take a couple damn pictures. I mean, I was like, holding it together with everything I could.
Yeah.
And he took maybe 10 pictures, And I just wanted them, and I don't know why. I wanted those pictures. I wanted to capture that. He then asked later if he saw the pictures, obviously, and he said, "Can I put these out? I think these can be healing."
Yeah.
And I said, "Sure." And since that time, he was then on a photo shoot later. He's a great photographer. His name is not on the tip of my tongue right here. But he was in another photo shoot, and his brother passed away.
Oh, wow.
And he asked his assistant, he said, "Take pictures." He stepped in front of the lights and said, take my picture.
Yeah.
So he has those pictures. And then a couple of weeks ago.
Spanish, give John Snyder a hug. I made him all upset.
Month and a half ago, while we were doing, the album is called Ruffled Skirts. And the studio got flooded. We live in Louisiana and had terrible flooding in March. And then in August, it was like flooding on crack. It was awful. In the kitchen, everywhere. Like 4 feet of water in the house. And we decided to do a record in the house, bring music back to the house. Because my parents always wanted me to do music again.
Right.
And I was like, well, I've been there, done that. Got a t-shirt. But this new album was birthed out of it. And in between a song called The Cajun Navy and excuse me, and a song called How Do You Stop the Water, my mom passed away.
Oh, Jesus.
And so I learned that in the room next door. I just finished this all raunchy song. Not raunchy, but really raucous song. And came in the other room, and Alicia looked at me, and I thought, oh, what happened? Did a dog get run? I mean, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened? And she said, your mom just passed away.
Ugh.
So.
There you go. On the guitar.
There she is on the guitar.
Boy, leave it at me.
Puppies. Then. But hey, you know, it's going to happen.
Right, but you're never prepared for it.
And it's far better as a parent. It is far, far better to have your... I cannot imagine in my wildest dreams outliving any of my children.
No.
I do not want to, under any circumstances, outlive any of my children.
Yeah.
So this is the way it is going to be. It's an appointment everyone keeps eventually.
Yeah. I keep telling my wife, I always say, I go, hey, listen, think about it, because you don't want to be caught off guard by it. You know what I mean? You know, I'm like, my dad's not that old. My dad is not even 70 yet.
Okay.
But I don't want to get the phone call one day and be like, what? You just have to, at a certain time, prepare yourself to know that that's going to happen.
Yeah, and know that you won't be prepared.
Yes, right. But also, I have a big thing about regret. I don't know what your relationship was like with your father, but I want to make sure that everybody that I love knows that I love them before they go. I don't want to have anybody like, why didn't I ever tell them this? Why? So I live in that moment. I do that sort of stuff now, so I'm happy.
The last thing my mom and I did a week before she passed away was watch The Haves and Have-Nots.
Oh, that's great. So she got to enjoy your
she
success.
She loved the show.
What do you got? You want to play a song?
I just want to stop crying.
Spanish, lower that mic number 3 over there to the guitar so that we can hear both. Listen, it was certainly not
by the way,
my
that photographer was Jeremy Cowart.
Jeremy.
Yeah.
And I certainly did not want to make John Schneider upset today, but that is one of the stronger things that I've ever seen, and certainly one of the most powerful.
Thank you. Sure. Let me do that. Hey, let me get over
here. If you're just joining us, this is John Schneider.
Come out to the film festival.
Yeah,
we're supposed to be talking about the film festival.
We will. Play your song, and then we'll talk about the film festival.
I'll just play part of it.
You play whatever you want.
Since we're talking about parents and about...
You're going to make me cry now?
Absolutely.
Oh, Jesus.
He sits on his front porch, stares across the street. Water's rising fast, nearly up to his feet. Neighbor passes by, says it's time to get out. But that old man just smiles, says I'm gonna ride this one out. 'Cause everything he owns lives inside this house, and everything he stands for
that he can't live without. It's where his babies took their first breath, where his wife took her last. Lord, how do you stop the water when it's there to steal your past?
Well, you really, you sound like an angel. That's beautiful. John Schneider, ladies.
Very nice.
Thank you. That song, that's the one I sang right after I found out my mom had passed away.
Wow.
So it goes on about memories and pictures from high school. I just couldn't, there's no way I could get to
no.
Yeah, so you know, music is so important. Music is so healing.
Yeah.
And it hurts. You know, a lot of music hurts.
It does.
The blues hurt. They used to say, or they still do, you can't sing the blues until you've lived them. And I used to think, maybe you. No, well.
Then you have it.
You live and you start living the blues, and then all of a sudden you start, the songs are
the
better.
The songs get better,
there's
yeah.
The reason why Johnny Cash was great when he started and greater when he ended.
That's right.
Right.
All right, let's talk about the film festival, the Cineflex Film Festival, which is happening up in my neck of the woods in Wesley Chapel. Beautiful theater up there.
Oh, my gosh, what a gorgeous theater. And the people there at Cinebistro are so fantastic.
They really are. They're wonderful people.
Yeah.
It's a great place.
And the food, we've been there a couple days. So the food is great. You go upstairs, you get some great food. I've not had the nachos. Right? I'm not eating the nachos downstairs.
Listen, it's the only movie theater I'll go and eat salmon in a movie theater. Like, you think you're going to get nachos all that, but they actually have really good food there.
Yeah,
what,
it's terrific.
Well, whose films are these? Like, who submits these?
Alicia and I put together this film festival because film festivals are largely centered on making film festivals money. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Right? I mean, they cost money, so it's all right. It's free enterprise. But we, because we're filmmakers, we thought it'd be better if there was a film festival, at least one, that was in the business of making the filmmakers some money, like they can make back the money that they spent on the movie, at least some of it.
Right.
Start to... The tipping point, as they say, in filmmaking is when you start to make even a dollar back.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a filmmaker knows it's cost, expense. Soon as somebody, I guarantee you, they say, I've got my first $20 bill from a horror comedy I did called Smothered. Somebody bought that DVD. I have that $20 bill in my pocket.
Right.
That's how we think. Because now we're on the road, you know, we're on the other side.
Yeah.
So in Cineflix Fest, what happens is the filmmakers actually get a portion of the door at the theater.
Right.
So we are hoping that people will come out to Cinebistro and watch.
How many films are there?
We have 22 films. We only have 2 days left in this location, but then we're in Lakeland next week.
Oh,
too.
So you're still right in driving range.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We're in the driving range, yeah. It's a 9-iron. We are in, in Cobb Lakeside.
That's 18. In Lakeland?
That's an IMAX in Lakeland, Florida, next week, November 7th through November 10th. But today and tomorrow, today's Wednesday, right?
Today is Wednesday,
okay,
yes.
Okay, today and tomorrow, we will be at Cinebistro there in Wesley Chapel.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of great films. Alicia and I have a couple of them in there to fill out the schedule. But come out and see Among the Discarded. It's a film where Trent Soto actually lived on Skid Row in Los Angeles with a GoPro so he could more fully understand the homeless situation.
Oh, wow.
So he lived there for 30 days, did not stay in a hotel. It was him, a GoPro, and a cardboard box.
On the streets of LA.
On the streets in Skid Row.
Right.
Or on Skid Row. We've got another one called Liberty Waning, which is this very strange take on the Second Amendment, where a terrible crime is committed and the police rush in, they separate the man from the weapon and ignore the man and arrest, try and convict the assault rifle. and ultimately destroy it.
Right.
Right. So, and it follows that all the way through to the point where I've seen it like 10 times now, and I'm not sure if it's the silliest or the most brilliant thing I've ever
seen. Yeah.
Right? So movies like that. We've got one from Bollywood called Wish We Were Kids that is, if you're into that sort of stuff, it's fantastic.
Right. What do they do? They submit them all to you guys and you pick
them? They submitted to Cineflix Fest, yeah, online, and okay. Then we took a look at all of them. We wound up with 22. But we have four in there. So 18 films. One called He's Not Looking So Good, which is a very bizarre, funny comedy short about zombies.
Uh-huh.
About love lost during the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
Of course, you got to make it.
Yeah, zombies got to be in there.
So we have a bunch of different movies. The great thing about independent films is they're ideas fully fleshed out that Hollywood will not do. And again, not saying Hollywood is chicken.
No, but they
Hollywood
have...
Hollywood is corporate.
Hollywood's about making money, yeah. Not necessarily about making
Hollywood's
movies.
Hollywood's about covering your ass.
Right.
Hollywood's not about making money. Hollywood is about being able to say, well, we had this writer, and Charlie said it was okay, and Bill said... It's about covering your ass when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
No one takes the blame. Everyone takes the credit.
Uh-huh.
In an independent film, like in a self-published novel, or garage band, not the program, but a real band that's in a garage. Google it. Someone's ass is hanging out there. It's like, okay, here's my idea. What if they arrested the gun and ignored the guy that pulled the trigger, and they follow that through? What if we did a documentary about World War II and told folks that there was such thing as the Japanese Americans were in the 422nd, and they were the first people at Dachau, and no one gave them any press. They actually kicked them out. They kicked out American soldiers
that fought
because that happened on a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were fighting with Japan at the time, and the people didn't want Japanese Americans to be the first people that came and gave starving soldiers a sandwich.
Right. Wow.
And these are things you learn in independent films.
They are absolutely,
unabashedly not politically correct.
Right. And because they don't have to, there's nobody's ass.
They don't have to
cover anybody's ass.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's my age or what the deal is, but I find now that most of the things that I want to watch end up being documentaries, not because they're not always smart documentaries, but I want to see more of that stuff than ridiculous, same rehashed Hollywood movie over and over again.
Oh, the reboot of this, the reboot of that.
But independent films are the same kind of way. You watch a movie, even I love when big actors will go make an independent film because you get great acting in a film, in a story that's not the same thing over and over again.
Some of the best stuff Johnny Depp has ever done.
Yeah.
Some of the best stuff, it's terrific.
Yeah.
It's terrific.
Well, good.
What's our other, John Voight will show up in movies, and you think, wow, who is that?
Yeah.
I've known John Voight for almost 40 years, and he does a movie, and I don't realize it's him until halfway through, and I think, is that John Voight?
Wow. It's amazing to me that some of those great actors, I love that you get to a point, I don't know if it's financially or what it is, where you're like, okay, I've gotten all that stuff aside now. Now I can go do the real stuff and stuff I always wanted to do.
Actors always want to do the real stuff.
Right.
It's like musicians will always recognize a real song or a real talent.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that if Eric Clapton was walking down the street and heard somebody, some homeless guy pissing on a wall that was singing a melody that was like... That he'd go over there and piss on the wall beside him. Sing that again.
Yeah, even Sting said he puts on an album, he's got to put out one commercial song so he can put the song that he wants to be on the album after that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's important, I think. It's freeing to watch independent films.
Yeah.
It opens up your mind to new ideas and new notions. Also, it is a way to support art.
Yep.
Independent films are art. They are someone's expression of a notion that perhaps you haven't given any thought to.
That's absolutely true. And I don't like to go to the movie theater to see movies because I hate teenage kids, but you're not getting a lot of that in a film festival. You're getting mostly adults when you go there, so you can go in the comfort of a Cinebistro in a nice movie theater.
Get a
and
nice
see,
scotch.
You can get a nice scotch. You can get whatever you want. Salmon.
Try the salmon.
Nachos. Cineflex Film Festival in Wesley Chapel today and tomorrow, and then at the Cobb Lakeside 18 and IMAX. That is going on November 7th through the 10th. And this is John Schneider. I appreciate you getting up early and coming. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it's so great to be here.
I'm sorry that we cried this morning when I felt like that was a good strong moment.
You know, it's good to cry. Get a good cry.
Yeah.
Get a good cry.
That's what music is. Music's like when you can write your stuff in a song and bang it out, that's the equivalent of a good cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So please come on out. Come out and see some movies. We have Inadmissible is one that I think is showing today. That's a crime drama that I'm in, so I do these too. You know, I decided after 50 that it was all going to be about their stories or things I need to say.
Sure.
You know, because once you're 50, I mean, I'm 56 now, and I don't know that many 112-year-olds. So I'm probably closer to the end than I am to the beginning.
I have to tell you, you look
so
great.
I need to get things done.
Yeah.
Right? You need to say some things.
You look way better than Wolfhat does.
Well, he's older than I am.
Yeah. Oh, he is significantly?
Yeah, he's 9 years older.
Oh,
he's nine
okay. All right,
my significant older.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Tom Wopat is John Schneider's significant older.
Listen, it is a pleasure having you in here. Thank you very much for letting us ask you dumb Dukes of Hazzard questions.
Hey, that's okay. There are no dumb questions, just dumb people. No, it was great. It was great, and I hope everybody watches the Haves and Have-Nots come. I'm sure that they will, but really, really what I desperately want people to do is come to see the film festival, because I want these folks, I want Trent to get some money back from what he did. I want our guys with Popolo, who came in from Hawaii.
Popolo.
Popolo is a fantastic action-adventure movie with they dare to kind of show you the bad side of Hawaii, just the other stuff that's going on in Hawaii. And they talk about the groups there that are desperate to make sure no one sees that. It's supposed to be palm trees and sand.
Black sand beaches and volcanoes.
It's supposed to be that, but you know, it can't all be that.
No.
And it's not like Hawaii 5-0. Nothing against Hawaii 5-0.
Right, but it's a real,
right?
Okay.
Popolo is a fantastic film. Again, independent film. Someone had something they had to say, and they went out and they said it. So their butts hanging out there and saying, "Look, this is how we feel. This is how we're saying it." So come on out and support independent film.
Where in the world are you staying that you're in Wesley Chapel?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that.
No, like a show up. I mean, you're staying in Wesley Chapel and then going to Lakeland. You're not going to have a very
hanging
good
around. My brother lives down here.
Oh, okay.
Too. So yeah, we hang around. We play a little golf.
Yeah. Oh, I got you. Now I know where you're at. There you go.
Yeah. So it's fun. So it's great down here. My mother was from Sanford.
Oh, right. Near Orlando.
So I spent a lot of time down here when I was younger.
Back when you were in Snellville or wherever.
That's right. We went to Cape Canaveral. I'll tell you how long ago that was.
Steve and Julie Weintraub here for the Golden Diamond Source. If you're thinking about getting engaged, Golden Diamond Source is your one-stop destination.
Shop, compare, and save at the Golden Diamond Source.
3800 Almerton Road.
Or online at goldendiamondsource.com.